It's my great pleasure to bring back two directors who are collaborating for the second time in a week for the Kalamazoo Bach Festival Week. This Saturday, the Kalamazoo Bach Festival will present a program called Visions and Miracles. It brings together the professional chamber ensemble, the Arcato Chamber Ensemble, which is led by Andrew Kohler, and the Bach Festival Chamber Singers, which is led by Chris Ludva. And I'd like to welcome both of you back, Chris and Andrew. Thank you.
Thanks. You, as always, Carol.
Can I have a little post-concert
synopsis
discussion of Carmina Burana? I was unfortunately unable to attend. I'd just love to hear how it went off.
I think it was a really exciting afternoon. I mean, the piece is such an event anytime that it's done, and it was pretty thrilling. We had a really wonderful and very receptive audience. I mean, I think we had something like close to 1,200 people there, almost.
Just about a full house.
It was really well attended, and people were enthusiastic. Obviously, the soloists were incredible, and they brought a special energy to performance.
Glamour.
Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, chorus sounded great and the orchestra played well. And I think it was really exciting, I'm sure, for both groups to get to hear the other, you know, to finally get to that point after rehearsing separately for all that time to hear one another and then finally get on stage. So it was a really exciting afternoon. Yeah, thanks for asking.
It was a final concert for the Kalamazoo Junior Symphony Orchestra season. They'll take the summer off and back next fall for season 81.
That's it. Yep.
Any plans to travel again, perhaps?
Certainly, yeah. We're just trying to work out the timing. We'll probably do it in either another 2 years or another 4 years from right now.
Another 2 to 4 years. Well,
yeah, we're just trying to decide. We're trying to, you know, there are other groups in town that also travel, and we don't want to overlap with them. We want to make sure that we're doing it at a different time. So either go before or after they do. So we're looking at 2 to 4 years.
Well, to compare and contrast, this concert requires fewer musicians on stage, but the level of musicianship is quite excellent, bringing together professional players and singers. Let's get into Visions and Miracles. Perhaps a little background on how you thought about putting it together?
Yeah, that name, we could do anything, really, under that that moniker. I don't know how I think we just had kind of a wish list of things that both of us wanted to do. And I knew we wanted to do something that was Baroque, because that's part of our name. And we often get the comment, well, why don't you do more Bach? You know, and it's such a challenge to do it with the larger choir. And so doing something from that period was important to us. And I thought, you know, we were trying to find a piece that, with this coming on the heels so quickly of Carmina, especially for the singers, that are many of the same singers, we wanted something that would be achievable, you know, a week after without being too overwhelming. But then we also wanted to include this, you know, more modern work by Ola Yelo, the Unicornis Captivatur. So I came to the table, I guess, with those. And then I think Andrew had a wish list and we said, wow, what could we call this thing? Oh, Visions and Miracles sounds... Well, that was actually the title of one of the pieces, which made it easier too, right?
Yeah.
Right. And actually the program really does hang together quite beautifully, I think. It makes a lot of sense. It really comes down to works that try and channel like the mystery and wonder of the human experience. So you think about it, you know, we've got a Vivaldi Gloria on there, and that's certainly a kind of wondrous event, you know, certainly seen through the lens of organized religion. The Yelo piece is, you know, about a unicorn, for goodness sakes, right? I mean, so that's certainly right at the forefront of the human imaginative experience. Visions and Miracles itself was inspired by medieval music. This is by an American composer named Chris Theophanides. So it also has a somewhat religious element, although it's quite distant at this point in this music. But it is one of the most euphorically joyous pieces I've ever heard. I mean, it just positively bubbles over with energy. We've got the five variants on, well, there's some debate about we should see it. Divus and Lazarus, or Dives and Lazarus.
I've always said Dives.
Well, Dives is absolutely the British Latin pronunciation, but the Latin pronunciation, for whatever that's worth, I don't know. Those guys probably didn't know what they were saying, is supposedly Divus, I think. But at any rate, but it's a wonderful piece by Ray Vaughan Williams. And of course, that story... you know, it's based on a folk tune, but the text of that folk tune comes from the biblical story of Divus and Lazarus, since it's the biblical story, I'll say it that way, which is about a rich man and a poor man, Divus being just the Latin term for rich man. Lazarus comes to him as a beggar, says, can you please help me? Can you give me some food? He refuses him. He says, you're no brother of mine. In the frequently sung folk song text, he's also... something of a miracle occurs because he sends his dogs after him, but the dogs come and instead of biting him, Lazarus, they just lick his sores and they go away. Mm-hmm. But then, of course, you know, the final judgment is rendered, and when they both die, Lazarus goes to heaven, whereas Divus ends up in hell. And then in between, we also have the Adagietto from Mahler's Fifth Symphony, which is, I think, one of the profoundest meditations on love. And I mean, surely there's no greater mystery of the human heart than that. So I think these are really all things that are kind of at that inexpressible edge of the human experience, things we all recognize, things that are fundamental to our humanity, to wonder about what else is there, what is beyond our experience. And I don't know that there's any art that can better capture those kinds of feelings than music.
And specifically, Western classical music does this in a particularly great way, where you can find these meditative, ecstatic kind of pieces, whereas a pop song might not quite capture it in time to get to that ecstasy.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Sometimes it takes time to build to a moment like that.
Yeah. The concert is Saturday at 7:30, and the concert will be held in Stetson Chapel at Kalamazoo College. This is a special venue as well.
And one of the first things, I think, once it's been renovated, in fact, because they just did the work last fall on the bell tower and they finished that, but then they've been working all spring on the inside of it. So many of the things that had started to go into disrepair have been repaired, and so I think it will be shining like the gem that it is, hopefully, on Saturday night.
Yeah. Well, that's exciting. Like, no one's seen the inside of it for a while.
Well, they weren't supposed to.
Yes, exactly. Unless they snuck in, maybe.
Okay, well, we will talk more about how the concert came together and how the pieces were prepared. But I have five variants on Dives and Lazarus queued up in a very British recording from the Academy of St. Martin and the Fields, Sir Neville Mariner. I always hear a harp in this piece. Is that right?
That's exactly right. Yeah,
you
this
need
is
a
for a string orchestra and harp, yeah.
Okay, so you will have a harpist on hand for Saturday.
Yes, the redoubtable Sylvia Norris, who's really one of the great harpists in our state. So it's very nice that she'll be joining us. I'm really excited to work with her.
Did you want to tell us about the theme at all? Is that how this works? A theme and then five variations?
That's exactly what it is. Yes, that's exactly how it works. And the folk theme is, I think, one of the loveliest probably in the British folk song repertory, which is awfully deep. And, you know, the thing is that Vaughan Williams is such a master of orchestration. I mean, even when he's working with limited forces, just a string ensemble, He has such a way of writing densely for the strings with all these moving lines, so that he immediately complicates in a beautiful way and elevates, I would say, this material, which is already very, very lovely, even in its most unadorned form. I think at the very first statement, it's really nice to hear three stages. First, there's a sort of three chords that are kind of like a little mini curtain raising gesture, you know, just here it is, we're starting. Then we hear the very beginning of the theme just in unison, just plain, you know, as if you were hearing it intoned in a sort of folk manner. But then immediately Vaughan Williams breaks into his characteristic orchestration, and there's such beautiful density and interplay between the lines. It's kind of like, it's it's just a great bath of sound is what it is, and it's really enjoyable to listen to it.
I've never heard it live. It'll be very special to hear it in the newly renovated Stetson Chapel on the Kalamazoo College campus this Saturday at 7:30 p.m., kicking off the program of Visions and Miracles. Five Variants on Dives and Lazarus by Rayfon Williams. That's the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields. And Rayfon Williams is the same gentleman who composed the fantasy on a theme of Thomas Tallis. What's the Lark?
The Lark Ascending.
Ascending. Yes. He did have that touch, didn't
yes.
he?
Yes. No, there's no question about it. I mean, it's just, well, actually, I don't know if your listeners heard you exhale deeply right after the recording finished, but that's exactly what I think everyone feels like after hearing something of such extraordinary beauty.
Yeah. If you tuned in during the music, you should know that the Arcato Ensemble, which is founded and led by Andrew Kohler, will perform this piece, Five Variants of Dives is how I say
Divas.
It. And Lazarus, to start a program called Visions and Miracles on Saturday at 7:30. It will be held in Stetson Chapel, which is newly open to the public after some renovations. And then we're just getting started at that point. The sort of pinnacle of the program is the final piece, the wonderful Gloria by Antonio Vivaldi. But in between, we'll touch on a lot of interesting composers and interesting pieces. You mentioned already the Adagio from the Fifth Symphony of Gustav Mahler. That again will be a purely instrumental piece on the program.
Right. In fact, the whole first half will be just be instrumental. It'll just be the string orchestra. And then the second half will begin with an a cappella work. And then finally, all forces will combine for the Vivaldi. But yeah, the Mahler Adagietto, of course, is, I think, probably one of the best known parts of this program. And indeed, we heard it not so long ago in Kalamazoo.
Yeah.
But I think it'll be very interesting to compare the experience of hearing it in the middle of this sprawling 75-minute symphony, where it is sort of an oasis of calm in all of that energy, versus hearing it separated from that, which it often is, because it is so demonstrably different than anything else. It only uses, again, just strings and harp, as the Vaughan Williams did.
I think of Leonard Bernstein when I think of the Adagietto. Did he single it out?
He did quite a bit, actually, because Leonard Bernstein, well, there's a couple things. One is he mentioned it in one of his Norton lectures at Harvard on the sort of the meaning of music. And he spends a few minutes talking about the beautiful sense of ambiguity that Mahler begins it with, which gives the piece this a kind of sense of timelessness, as if it's always existed and always will exist, simply because the home base of the harmony in that movement isn't established until a few bars in. So the way that he begins, it really could be anything, you're not sure. And also the rhythm is somewhat ambiguous as well. So all that ambiguity just coalesces beautifully a few bars into it and allows you to feel that sigh-like feeling that you were having earlier. So yes, he's mentioned it, but he also, I believe it might have been played at his funeral, I think, as well. So he, I mean, he was generally, many people credit him in general with having sort of spearheaded the Mahler revival. You know, because of course that music fell out of favor during the Second World War, and there was sort of a generation that had lost it. Well, Mahler was a Jewish composer, and obviously the Nazi regime didn't want to perform him anymore. And so that voice was somewhat lost for a period of time, but then Bernstein was very instrumental in sort of getting people to play it, even going back to the Vienna Philharmonic and sort of insisting that they play it. That was Mahler's orchestra, strangely enough, but he reintroduced it to them, if that can be believed. So he gets a lot of credit, I think, for sort of turning us on to the extraordinary beauty of Mahler. But the Adagietto, of course, is his love letter to his wife, Alma. And so the story goes, could be apocryphal, but Mengelberg, who was a friend of both of them, a famous conductor and one of the people who first conducted the Fifth Symphony, claims that both of them separately told him this story, which is that in lieu of a love letter while Mahler was courting Alma Schindler, he just sent her the manuscript of this Adagietto. And she herself, a very fine musician, looked at it and knew exactly what he meant, and they were married shortly thereafter.
Let's leave the story there, because it doesn't necessarily turn out as well as it starts.
Yeah. It is a piece that captures that moment of time, right. And that was a beautiful moment in time.
Well, I usually do follow a concert order in my interviews, but in this case, I'd like to jump around a little bit so that we hear from Chris Ludva, the artistic director of the Kalamazoo Bach Festival and the leader of the Kalamazoo Bach Festival Chorus, and in this concert on Saturday, leader of the Bach Festival Chamber Singers. This is a smaller, reduced group of voices, mm-hmm. All very skilled.
Yeah, so we wanted to do, I mean, part of the challenge is some of the works require really large forces, like, you know, certainly Carmina and our Christmas concert usually, and we wanted to have options as we've done before.
Belshazzar's Feast.
Belshazzar, yes.
From last year.
Lord. yeah. And so this was an opportunity for us to do something repertoire-wise, again, part of the Bach Festival, so right on the heels of our other concert, but recognizing that not everybody in the chorus wants to dedicate that kind of time. And yet there is a group of 24, as it ends up being, that are really hungry for more opportunity to sing these great choral masterworks. And Vivaldi is certainly one of them, but then also the chance to do some a cappella singing on a piece that is a modern and not performed that often, and yet which we find is accessible and has some of the hallmarks of great choral writing. So,
is that really your background, where you prepared smaller ensembles and a cappella style concerts?
I've kind of bounced around a lot. I mean, I spent some time doing youth orchestras and time in opera and time in musical theater and time with the... So I've just... I've never really landed, I guess, which I think is why I enjoy the environment at Kay so much, is that it has so many... I mean, the liberal arts college, is it by nature, is sort of that way. And so it allows me the chance to try things like this, whereas other institutions might not be quite so open to the idea of trying different combinations, a different repertoire and different styles of music and or different incarnations of the group itself. So this is 24 of our kind of core group of 85 or 90 that we'll sing on Saturday night.
Yeah. Did this require an additional day of rehearsing per week?
What I like about this one also is that it sort of sets the bar really high on the singer and says, look, we're going to do this in four services. You know, it's much more the orchestral model, I think, at least for the professional group. So we had a rehearsal 2 weeks ago before Carmina, and we just kind of read through all the material and pointed out the areas where people might need to work on it on their own, and then said, look, you're coming on Wednesday night. We're going to spend a few minutes, maybe 45 minutes of our own time, and then join up with Arcado tonight, and you know, we expect them to show up ready to go. So,
well, my inner 8-year-old is very excited about hearing about a piece that has a unicorn in it. And it's the one I've never heard of before. I can't even pronounce the composer's name, but in Latin it looks, the title is Unicornis Captivatur.
Yes, the captured unicorn. Okay. So we're, yeah. So this fits with our theme, which we didn't really intentionally do, of exploring ancient codexes this spring. So of course Carmina was based on that. This one comes from 1400 in Switzerland. It's called the Engelberg Codex. It was another series of writings that was discovered and talks about this captured unicorn, but within it, it's all this mysticism and clearly ties all of the things in it in the poem are metaphors for various things within the Christian tradition. So there are references to this crocodile that is an ancient story that the crocodile has this sort of lizard that it eats, and then the lizard eats the crocodile from within. And somehow that's supposed to signify salvation. And it doesn't sound like a lot of salvation to me, but you know, it is a metaphor within the Christian tradition. So, and then there's a 3-day period where in the middle of the piece, things get very, very soft and there's a tonality change. And then this literally almost as if you were hearing one of the great masses, you know, this, and on the third day he rose again. And the text is literally on the third day, and then it carries on from there. So there's a lot of, I think, connection to the Christian tradition within this piece, but also a lot of kind of generalized metaphor around unicorns and lizards and crocodiles, and it's a very dramatic piece.
What does the unicorn symbolize?
Well, there's a lot of different theories on that. One has to do with the unicorn being held in Mary's lap, and the...
I've seen tapestries or something.
Yeah,
like
you often do. And the unicorn, you know, has to do with the fact that it was an Immaculate Conception within that story, and then that the horn of the unicorn may have been what actually impregnated. It's a very complex story. Yeah.
So
I won't go into any more detail than
metaphors,
that.
Metaphors, eating metaphors.
Yes.
So is this sung in the language in which it was discovered, this
yes.
manuscript?
Yes, so it's done in Latin. Ole Yalo, the composer, Norwegian composer, very kind of one of the hot choral composers right now. Does a lot of really, really great writing, very lyrical, easy to sing. It has kind of a ritornello, if your audience is familiar with that idea, that ties us back to the Baroque and this kind of returning theme that keeps coming back. And it literally, in that case, is an Alleluia. So you have this story about the unicorn and then this Alleluia, and then the story about the crocodile and Alleluia, and then on the third day, rising again and Alleluia. So again, it's not as if it's, it will be obvious that it has religious overtones, but it also can be heard, I think, in a very secular sort of just kind of a fascinating story about this unicorn.
This concert will be held on Saturday in Stetson Chapel at Kalamazoo College, beginning at 7:30. It's one of the concerts the Bach Festival has partnered with the organization Open Doors Kalamazoo, and a number of the seats will be made available to individuals and families who are participating in Open Doors. You'll have audience members who are very familiar, perhaps, with classical music, and others who are just completely unfamiliar and don't know what to expect at all. And that'll be kind of exciting for the musicians and the singers.
I think it's all very accessible. I mean, it's challenging for those people that want a musical challenge in this program, but also, you know, by design, it's very much material that people will have either heard or at the first hearing can just instantly, I think, connect with it.
Well, Chris, should we listen to a little bit of the...
Let's do.
Yeah. Unicornis Captivatur. Yes, Captivatur. This is music of Ole Yalo. We just listened to a modern piece of choral music called Unicornis Captivatur by Ola Yelo. And my guest here is Chris Ludva, the director of the Kalamazoo, artistic director of the Kalamazoo Bach Festival. And he'll be leading the Kalamazoo Bach Festival Chamber Chorus in that work on Saturday. The concert will be held in Stetson Chapel, 7:30 p.m. Details at kalamazoobachfestival.org. I love the sort of triumphant nature of the ending of the piece, but it really did go in all sorts of directions.
Yeah, it varies a lot, and it varies a lot in a lot of other choral writing traditions. And so it will, even though it's a modern piece, hopefully it's something that people will, I think, immediately enjoy and hear similarities to other genres that they are more familiar with, perhaps. Mm-hmm.
The other major piece you've prepared is Vivaldi's Gloria, and we'll be talking about that in the little time we have left. But I wanted to touch on another piece very likely unfamiliar to our listeners, and that's by an American composer with a Greek name.
Yeah, Chris Theophanides. Wonderful composer. He's on the faculty of Yale University right now, and I think I want to say somewhere else as well, maybe Eastman. Anyway, he became known to me through a work of his that's probably his most popular, most often played piece called Rainbow Body, which is for full orchestra, and which is based on a chant by Hildegard von Bingen. So he definitely has a great interest in the music of the very distant past, and that's indeed the point of inspiration for this originally string quartet work that became a work for string orchestra called Visions and Miracles, and from which we get our concert title. He was actually listening to a CD of old Spanish medieval music called Visions and Miracles. And it was at a time where he said he had written, it was right around the turn of the millennium, he had written a lot of rather dark pieces that dealt with sobering themes. And he thought, I need something to lighten up, just something that's optimistic and joyous. And that's what led, and he listened to this music, which of course this, he was really quite bowled over by this medieval Spanish music, particularly because it had such unusually asymmetrical rhythmic characteristics. And that is something that he just tried to capture in a more modern voice. So it's a three-movement work. Each movement has very evocative titles. The first movement is called All Joy Wills Eternity, which is a quote of Nietzsche. The second movement is called Peace, Love, Light, You, Me, One. You, Me, One is all one word, which is apparently a poetic fragment from Timothy Leary, the counterculture figure of the 60s. And the last movement comes from a line in another medieval troubadour song, and it is called I Add Brilliance to the Sun. And the outer movements are both incredibly fast, full of that asymmetrical metrical writing, and it is just brilliantly joyous and bubbly and truly a euphoric piece. Well, you know, I think it's almost harder to write music that's really happy. but Theophanides has really, I think, succeeded here, and it is just utterly captivating. Perhaps we could hear a little bit of that first movement, All Joy Wills Eternity.
All right. And we'll be back with Andrew Kohler and Chris Ludva. We're previewing Visions and Miracles, which is the title of this piece. And the concert is Saturday at 7:30 p.m. at Stetson Chapel on the Kalamazoo College campus. Details at kalamazoobachfestival.org. It's a modern classic. What a terrific opening. It's the first movement to Visions and Miracles by Chris Theophanidis.
Theophanidis, yeah.
Yeah. So he is more known for tortured and sad pieces.
I don't know that that's necessarily true, but he had just at that time been writing a few that had these sort of heavy themes, and he wanted something truly joyous, and I think you can hear that he succeeded wildly in this piece. And in fact, I love that the last gesture in this movement, that thing that we just heard, it sounds to me a little bit like somebody whistling a tune as they're walking away from you. And he writes childlike as an instruction in the score. And I think, you know, I mean, that's the core of this whole program, right? I mean, who but a child is more in touch with that sense of awe, that sense of wonder? So I think it's a perfect little instruction to the performer.
Visions and Miracles, the name of the program, on Saturday at 7:30 p.m. It will be held in Stetson Chapel, and you can find out about tickets right now through the Bach Festival website, kalamazoobachfestival.org. And we have a minute and a half left to touch on Vivaldi's Gloria, which is the big piece on the program, a 30-minute work. But it's a Baroque gem of major key love. I mean, I think, Chris, will you be conducting this performance?
Yeah, I'll conduct this one.
Okay. What's your takeaway on the Gloria?
Well, it's easy to listen to and really fun to sing. I mean, there's a reason that people love hearing it and love performing it, and it's just an effervescent, truly joyous ending to the program.
Well, all I could find in the library were Baroque or period in mm-hmm. style performances. What's on the spectrum of modern to Baroque? Where are you going?
We
to
will
be?
Do it tuned to A440, but we will use both harpsichord and portative organ.
Yay.
And mainly that's for the singers, I think, more than anything. I think they are so used to singing in that tuning. So,
well, final thoughts on Saturday's concert?
I just think it's one of the more imaginative, I mean, of course, I'm biased toward it, but I think it's a really, I won't say more imaginative, it's a very imaginative concert, and I think immediately accessible, and I think it's one of those pieces that, it's so nice to put together a really wide variety of material. So often they fall in one theme, and I think this is not will not disappoint anybody.
Well, thank you, Chris, and thank you, Andrew.
Thank you, Kara.